young, I'd listen to the radio.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Bob Trout speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
This is Mutual.
This is ABC Radio Network.
Happy New Year, and thanks for joining us here on Same Time, Same Station. John and Larry Gassman.
We're back.
Yeah, that's right. Like it or not?
And, no, we're back from the North Pole.
Oh, you're right. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, yes,
just
yeah.
Don't think of these things. I have to remind you.
Uber did a good job.
They did. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm back fully voiced.
Did
now.
You tip the driver?
I told
you did. Okay.
Yeah,
you did. No, you didn't.
I told him, don't quit your day job.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was the tip, the first one of 2018.
Uh-huh. These are good resolutions I want to keep.
In about 90 minutes, we'll hear the Jack Benny program. We also have Escape planned for you, Fibber McGee and Molly, and this first show, which is KC Crime Photographer. It's called Hot New Year's Party and was originally broadcast January 1st, 1948.
The Anchor Hawking Glass Corporation brings you Crime Photographer. Happy New Year, Casey. Happy New Year, Ethelbert.
Same to you, Marvin.
Hey, you know, this 1948 is going to be a great year.
Why so?
Well, don't you know? It's leap year.
And just what can leap year mean to you?
Why, I'm surprised at you, Ethelbert. Don't you know that that means an extra Thursday?
So what?
So what? That extra Thursday gives me an extra chance to say that Anchor Hawking is the most famous name in glass. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Tony Marvin. Every week at this time, the Anchor Hawking Glass Corporation of Lancaster, Ohio, and its more than 10,000 employees bring you another adventure of Casey Crime Photographer, ace cameraman who covers the crime news of a great city. Written by Alonzo Dean Cole, our adventure for tonight, Hot New Year's Party. Nine on the morning of New Year's Day. And to some people, that hour on that day can be very bleak and dismal. Ethelbert, the head bartender of the Blue Note Cafe, is obviously not one of those unfortunate, for we find him in the morning.
Oh, what a beautiful thing.
Hi, Walter.
Yeah.
Bring up two more bottles of aspirin. They're going to be our best sellers today.
Okay.
Oh, what a beautiful... Well, look who's here. Happy New Year, Casey. And same to you, Miss Williams. What's the matter with you two?
Ask Walter to bring us a couple of cups of coffee, pal.
Strong and black.
Uh-oh.
And slip me an aspirin tablet.
Make that a double order.
Uh-oh.
Hey, Walter, draw two.
Coming up.
What's Hermit Chittison doing here? Practicing at this hour in the morning?
He couldn't get home on account of the snow. He slept here all night.
Oh.
Here's some special headache medicine for you to stay out all night.
We haven't been stay out all night.
I know. Like good, sensible folks, you left the party early, just before daylight. And then you got all of an hour's sleep before you had to come to work on an 8 a.m. shift.
He's a wise guy, Annie.
Yeah.
You should have been like me. I wasn't on duty last night, but did I spend my leisure time in idle revelry? I did not. At 12 o'clock, my sister Edna and me wished one another a happy new year over a glass of good, healthful milk. Then I retired and enjoyed a fine, refreshing sleep. So, on this beautiful morning, you find me full of vim, vigor, and vitamins. Have another aspirin on the house.
Shall I kill this guy quickly, Annie? Listen, vim, vigor, and vitamins. The reason Miss Williams and I feel beat up is that ever since a few minutes after we reported for work this morning, we've been inhaling smoke.
Smoke?
There was another warehouse fire this morning. Near Chatham Circle.
That's the only New Year's party we've attended, and it was a red-hot one, too.
Bad fire, huh?
Yeah, plenty bad.
Oh, here's Walter with our coffee.
Oh, thanks, Walter. Happy New Year. Boys are welcome, too.
Thanks, Walter.
Okay.
Your papers kind of hinted that them warehouse fires lately have been arson jobs, Miss Williams.
Oh, we're morally certain of it, Ethelbert. And that Jake Schultz is the man behind them.
He and his mob make a deal with the owners of them places to split the fire insurance, huh?
That's right. That's the racket.
Skinny Jake Schultz is a pretty smart cookie, I hear. Neither the cops or the fire inspectors has ever got anything on him.
Yeah, well, if he's behind the torch job we just covered, he isn't so smart. This one lets somebody in for a hot seat rap.
What do you mean?
Well, the fire was set at night, and there was a human being in the building, an old watchman. That means arson in the first degree. The watchman got out all right, but a fireman was killed by falling timbers. And when death is caused through commission of first-degree arson, it becomes first-degree murder.
And a reliable witness says that he saw three men run out of the warehouse a few minutes before the fire was discovered. He's given the police a first-class description of them.
Was one of them Schultz?
No, of course not. Dick doesn't do any firebug stuff himself. So one of those three guys is caught and sings. It's going to be too bad for his boss, man. Annie, how about some more coffee?
No, we don't have time, Casey.
That's
We've
right.
got to get out to Barstow College.
Well, there's no hurry about that.
Yes, there is. City Desk wants the dope on Professor Wendell right away.
Who's Professor Wendell and what's he doing?
Oh, he's a teacher at Barstow College. He went for a walk last night and he hasn't come back.
Now, the professor who shares an apartment with Wendell just reported his disappearance to the Missing Persons Bureau.
Well, he thinks the guy has met with foul play?
That's right. Well, if we must, we must, Annie. Come on, let's get started at Professor Gerber's place.
But this Professor Gerber's the one who reported the mysterious vanishing of this Professor Wendell,
That's
huh?
right. After we waste our time with him, Wendell will undoubtedly show up with a perfectly good reason for staying out all night.
Well, I'm perfectly willing to waste time on such cases today. I'd like to start the new year safely and sanely.
Me too, Annie, me too. To establish a precedent for 1948, no jams and no trouble, nothing but peace, sweetness, and light.
Instead of just a hope, why don't you two make that a New Year's resolution?
Well, that's a good idea, pal. Oh,
excellent. We here highly resolve
that for the coming year,
and starting now,
no jams,
no trouble,
nothing but peace, sweetness, and light.
Professor Wendell and I have shared this apartment for over 5 years, Miss Williams, ever since he lost his wife. I know him, and I'm certain he wouldn't stay out all night without notifying me if he was able to do so.
Well, when did you see him last, Professor Gerber?
He attended a New Year's party at the Teachers Club, a most decorous affair, I assure you. Shortly after toasting the arrival of the New Year with a glass of sherry, he left saying he was going to take a bus to Chatham Circle.
Chatham Circle?
He liked to wander around there.
That's a tough neighborhood.
I know it, Mr. Casey, and I have repeatedly warned Professor Wendell to keep out of such neighborhoods, especially after dark. But to him, they were most interesting because of the criminal element he found there.
He was interested in the criminal element?
Very much so. Frankly, instead of the brilliant authority on ancient civilizations which Professor Wendell has been for many years, I am certain that he would rather have been a private detective.
An amateur Sherlock Holmes.
He more particularly admired a fictional character called Dr. Thorndyke.
Casey, if he was snooping around Chatham Circle early this morning, he may have seen something he wasn't supposed to see.
Yeah, that warehouse fire was started early this morning, Annie.
The warehouse fire?
Look, will you give us a description of your friend, Professor Gerber?
Clarence Wendell is a small man, about 5'3", I should say, and he weighed not more than 130 pounds. He had light blue eyes, thin gray hair, and wears gold-rimmed spectacles. Last night he wore a dark blue overcoat, black velvet hat.
Casey!
Professor, did you give that description to the cops when you reported him missing?
Oh, of course. I gave them a photograph of Clarence.
And it didn't mean anything to them?
Mean anything?
Well, it exactly fits a witness description of one of three men who ran out of the Chatham Circle warehouse early this morning, just before it caught on fire.
I don't understand.
Well, the Missing Persons Bureau men who talked to Professor Gerber wouldn't necessarily know about that arson business, Annie.
Oh, no, that's right. It's being handled by the homicide squad.
Will you please explain?
Well, there's more important things to do first, Professor, if you don't mind. Where's your phone? I want to call Captain Logan of Homicide and get him to check with missing persons right away.
That's all you're going to do, Casey. Just phone. Remember our New Year's resolution.
Hey, Casey, I got hold of that warehouse witness right after you phoned me. When he looked at the photograph missing persons had of Professor Wendell, he identified it immediately.
Wendell was the little guy he saw coming out of the warehouse looking, right?
Yeah, between the two other men. He hasn't been able to identify the others from pictures in our criminal file.
And if the witness saw Wendell between the other guys?
Yeah. Now he recalls that both had a grip on the little man's arms.
Well, when Professor Wendell was playing detective last night, he accidentally stumbled onto the arsonist while they were setting the fire. And they kidnapped him to keep him quiet.
That's the way it looks, Miss Williams. Which doesn't help us find Wendell or the firebug.
Well, like the fire inspectors, you think that Jake Schultz mob is behind
him? Sure, but suspicion and proof are very different things. We haven't a single lead to work on.
Professor Wendell's a definitely...
He's a definite complication.
Huh?
If two of Schultz's torches put the snatch on him this morning because he caught him setting a fire, they probably bumped him off by now.
Logan, I don't think Professor Wendell has been bumped off.
Why?
Casey, the gang won't dare let him live if he saw what we think he did.
Oh, they'll give him the works eventually, Annie. But Jake Schultz is going to do a whole lot of thinking before he okays a murder that would hit the front pages and stay there. Logan, Jake's in the fire business, but he does his best to avoid strong heat.
Yeah. I'll have Skinny Jake and his mob brought in. We'll force information out of him.
Ah, you won't force anything out of Jake or his mob. That's been tried before.
Do you know of anything else we can try?
I can try something.
You?
Yeah.
What?
I think I'll have to keep to myself. There can't be any cops in the picture, Logan.
Meaning you know some crook who might be persuaded to spill?
Meaning you ask no questions and I answer none, now or later.
Okay. Help me find Professor Wendell alive, and you can write your own ticket.
Attaboy, Logan. Thank you. I'll get started right away. Now, stick around your office here, and I'll phone you after I make my contact.
I'll be near the phone.
So long.
Oh, I'm going with you. See you later, Captain.
Okay, Miss Williams. And carry your luckiest horseshoe, Casey.
Yeah, I guess I'll need it, pal.
Oh, what are you going to do, Casey?
Annie, I'm going to leave you as soon as we reach the street door.
Not unless you tell me what this is all about.
Look, kid, I can't tell anybody.
Well, then I'll trail you.
Well, if you do, you may wreck the one chance of finding Professor Wendell alive.
Okay. Well, just tell me one thing, off the record. Where are you going?
Completely off the record, Annie. Nick Morrow's tavern.
Well, the Schultz mob hangs out at Nick Morrow's. Jake Schultz owns the place.
Yeah?
Casey, you'll be sticking your neck out down there. Quite a few of the mob know you. Schultz knows you.
I'll be okay, Annie.
Well, maybe. Resolutions are so easily broken, Casey, we should only have hoped for a safe and sane 1948.
Today, a lot of you probably met Jadeite Dinnerware for the first time. Because Jadeite is the perfect solution to the problem raised by an unusually large number of guests. Jadeite cups and saucers, Jadeite dessert plates and salad plates, Jadeite dinner plates, soup plates, vegetable bowls and platters are as lovely as Chinese porcelain. They're as heat-proof as the Fire King oven glass you use for baking. Yet they're so inexpensive that you can buy all the extra pieces you need for entertaining without making a dent in your budget. For example, Jadeite cups and saucers cost only 15 cents for the two pieces, and you can buy a complete 35-piece dinner service for six for less than $5. Now, you'll find Jadeite dinnerware at chain stores, hardware stores, department stores, and all other stores selling chinaware and glass. Ask for Jadeite by name. Now, it's spelled J-A-D-E-I-T-E. Jadeite, newest triumph of Anchor Hocking. The most famous name in glass.
No, Red Monahan ain't in the back room, Casey. He ain't been in the joint at all today.
Well, I'll stick around, Nick. You'll probably be in later. Give me a beer, will you?
Okay.
The bar do a big New Year's business last night, Nick?
I can't complain. You still running with the cops, Casey?
Why, Dick, I don't know what you mean. I'm a newspaper guy.
Sure, I know. Here's your beer.
Thanks, Nick.
What do you want to see Red Monahan about?
If it's any of your business, Nick, I want to thank him for the Christmas card he sent me.
You've been waiting here over an hour for me, Casey?
That's okay, Red. It's okay.
Oh, it ain't okay. You're one guy I wouldn't keep waiting for no reason.
Well, let's sit down here. Over the corner table there, we can talk privately.
Yeah, okay. Hey, Nick, we're going to sit down. Bring me and my pal Casey a drink.
Okay, Red.
Come on, Casey. Hey, it's good to see you. Here, take a load off your face.
Thanks.
Now, what's on your mind?
I'm going to ask a favor of you, Red.
Favor?
Yeah.
I owe you a debt, fella. One I can't ever pay. My only kid would be dead if it wasn't for you. I'll never forget how you pulled her out of the river when she was drowning.
Here's your drinks.
Oh, thanks, Nick.
That's all, Nick, thanks.
Tell me, what can I do for you, Casey?
All right, I'll give it to you quick and straight, Red. I want Professor Wells.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I think you do. I know how close you are to Schultz. Nick, I give him a word. That the cops don't know and won't know that I'm talking to you. All I want is that little professor, and I want him alive.
I ain't got the slightest idea what you're driving at, pal. I swear I ain't.
Say you owe me a debt, Red. Under ordinary circumstances, that's a debt that only a heel would try to collect. But under these circumstances, I ask Wendell's life in exchange for your kid.
I can't give it to you.
Because he's been killed?
No, he ain't been killed. I tell you, I don't know anything about him.
You can't lie to me, Red. Look, you're a crook, but you're not a murderer. If you don't tell me where to find Professor Wendell, you'll be committing murder right now, just as surely as though you held a gun to the guy's head.
I ain't even seen the guy, Casey. I won't see him.
You know what I mean. Keep your nose clean, fella.
I ain't no squeal. I don't rat.
You're ratting on a debt. You owe me a life.
Okay, Casey, you win. I'm coming clean with you. But I had no part in anything that happened this morning.
Where is the professor?
He's being kept in an old house out in Bristol Road. While Schultz makes up his mind when and how to bump him over.
Where on Bristol Road?
East of Old Turnpike. Third farmhouse on the right-hand side.
Third farmhouse on the right, yeah.
Yeah, now get out of here, Casey. It's curtain for me if the mob finds out that I...
Nobody will ever find it out from me, Red. Thanks a million and so on.
So,
what's the matter?
So, excuse me, Jake. Just came out of the back room with two guys of the mob.
Hello, Red.
Hi, Jake. Hi, Maury. That's Vic, Sam.
Yeah, hi.
Jason. I haven't seen you for a long time.
Well, I haven't been around your way, Schultz.
Nick phoned me a while ago that you were waiting here for our pal Red. Knowing how he feels about you on account of his kid, I decided to come over.
You, in the back way?
Uh-huh. I've been sitting in the back room, listening through the wall.
Listening? You heard?
Yeah, plenty. Walk into that back room, both of you. Your hands in sight. Get going.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, we've got a car in the alley, and you two dopes are getting into it.
Well, what are you going to do to it, Jake?
You can guess, can't you, Red?
Yeah. And I ain't going to take it.
That goes for me, too, Red. You can see he's fucked up.
Don't shoot, guys. It might bring the cops.
Hey, this case is getting my gap, though.
No, he isn't.
Got him with your blackjack.
Yeah, Casey's out of the picture now, Red.
Yeah, I got right on the control, Jake. What's happening anyway?
I'm doing just that.
Now they're both out cold.
Yeah, but not cold enough. You and Murray, put him in the car, Sam, and we'll all go for a ride. That's a good spot, Sam. Stop the car.
Okay, boss.
Well, Red, this is the end of the ride for you and Casey.
Hey, they can't hear you, Jake.
Huh?
When you socked the back of Nick's joint, you done an A1 job.
Still out, eh?
And how?
All right, pull him out of the car and roll him into the ditch here.
Yeah, give me a hand, Sam.
Hey, Maury.
Got him? Yeah, I got him. Pull him back.
All right, now get back in the driver's seat, Sam. You, Maury, give him each a slug through the head.
Me?
Yes, you heard me.
Hey, you're afraid of killing, ain't you, Jake?
Oh, I'm not afraid of it. I've just been smart enough to keep myself and you guys clear of it. Now we've got no choice.
But you want someone else to do it.
Well, do it if you haven't got the guts. Get back in the car.
Yeah, that suits me fine. Hey, why are you getting in too?
I'll shoot from here. Sam, be ready to step on the gas when I do. This isn't a private road.
I'll be ready.
I got the bus in gear and my foot on the clutch.
Let them guys in the ditch have it, Jake.
All right, I'm letting them have it.
Hey, a car's coming, boss. Huh? From behind us.
I see it. Get away, Sam.
Hey, you only shot one guy, Jake.
I can't do any more shooting now. Get away from that car behind us, Sam. Get away!
Well, you certainly had that lucky horseshoe with you, Casey. We found Red Monahan lying beside you in the ditch with a bullet through his chest. You only had an egg-sized lump on the back of your head.
Oh, Casey didn't get off so easy, Captain Logan. He was unconscious for almost 2 hours after he was brought to this hospital.
Well, the doc says he's all right now, Miss Williams.
Yeah, it's all right, honey. I'm okay.
I've been so worried.
Hey, they killed poor Red.
Oh, he's going to pull through. Doc didn't get him in a vital spot.
Oh, I'm glad of that. I'm glad. No, Red's more than a half-right guy, much more. But you want to know what happened?
Take it easy, pal. You were delirious for a while after they brought you here, and you did a lot of talking.
He kept saying that Red Monahan had told you that Professor Wendell had been held prisoner in the house in the room.
The old turnpike, third farmhouse on the right.
Wait a minute, I said all that when I was out.
Over and over.
Well, then you went to Bristol Road and found the professor.
And my guys went there, pal, but too late.
Hilton and then with him evidently knew they hadn't moved it.
They lost no time of taking Professor Wendell away. We found the house empty. Haven't any idea where they've taken him.
Well, you found a possible lead in that Bristol Road farmhouse, Captain. Go ahead, show me.
Lead? What?
That thing's no lead, Miss Williams. It merely proves that Professor Wendell was in the house.
What'd you find, Luke?
He found a belt.
A belt?
With Professor Wendell's initials on the buckle.
Now, take a look, pal. Miss Williams insists that these cuts in the edges of the belt
mean something.
Well, they're fresh cuts, Casey. See?
Yeah.
When we found the belt in a room where Wendell was probably held prisoner, we figured that those cuts might be some sort of a tip-off about where he'd been taken from there. That hasn't worked out that way.
Funny cuts, aren't they? Some straight, some slanting, and irregularly spaced.
Yeah, Wendell knew that an ordinary written message wouldn't help it. The men guarding him would have found it and destroyed it. I'm sure these cuts are a message in code.
Our cipher expert at headquarters didn't recognize it as any code.
Well, your chief cipher experts were taking New Year's Day off, Captain. The men on duty are apprentices.
Yeah.
Does that mean anything to you, Casey?
No, not a thing.
It makes it unanimous. They're Greek as far as all of us are concerned.
Greek? Hmm? Annie, wait a minute. Professor Gerbel told us that Wendell was an authority on ancient civilizations. Have you shown this belt to Gerber or whatever his name is, Logan?
No, but I phoned him.
All right, we're going to show it to him right now.
Casey, you can't get out of bed.
I'm out. Beat it, Annie. Come on, let me get dressed. I want to hear what Professor Gerber says when he sees this cut-up belt.
All right, I'm going.
You're right, Mr. Casey. The belt conveys a message.
It does, Professor Gerber?
Yes, in the oldest secret codes that history records. The ancient Spartans used it to convey secret military information. It is called Sitily. Professor Wendell hoped you'd bring this to me, Captain Logan.
He did, eh?
He must have. He knew I'd be able to read a Sicily thing.
Why are you wrapping that belt around your arm?
So that I may be able to decipher its markings, Miss Williams. You see, to write a Sicily message, the ancients wrapped a strip of papyrus, long and narrow, like this belt, around a staff of predetermined circumference. Spirally, with the edge of each spiral joining that of another. Then on the joining edges, they wrote the secret information they wished to impart. When the strip was unwound from the staff, nothing but apparently idle markings were visible on its edges. Now, the belt is completely wound about my arm. See? Its message is placed?
No, not to me. All I see is that the edges of the cuts meet.
But the cuts form letters, Captain.
Greek letters?
They're Greek, Logan. Anne knows. She's been to college.
What do they say?
In rough translation, they are taking me to Diana's house.
Diana's house?
Diana was the Roman name for the Greek goddess Artemis.
Say, I'm not a shark on the classics, but I get it.
So do I, Logan.
Well, I don't.
Neither do I.
Professor Gerber, Annie, the name of Skinny Jake Schultz's best girlfriend is Diana. And to get away from the classics entirely, it's Diana McGillicuddy.
I never thought Schultz would take Wendell to such an obvious hideout, Casey.
Neither did I, Logan, which means Schultz has been smarter than we are. Well, all right, let's go.
All set, Captain Logan. We have the joint surrounded.
Men are ready to break in from all sides, Sergeant?
As soon as they hear your whistle, sir.
They'll hear that as soon as I get to the front door. Now, you stay there, Casey.
Oh, no. I got a little personal matter to settle with Skinny Jake Schultz. I got a hunch he's in Diana's house.
You should still be in the hospital, you Sam.
All right, but I'm not. Okay, blow your whistle, pal.
I haven't got time to argue with you.
This is it, guys! Hey, cops! You're coming in from all sides!
Take a map! What? That means you, Schultz!
Oh, no, you're not gonna take me!
You're wrong, Jake!
Hey, Casey!
I owed him that KO, Logan. And I owe these other two mugs something, too.
No. We've given up.
Lay off, Casey.
Let me go, Logan. Let me go.
Cut it. This is a police job. You can take the pictures, but you can't make them.
Well, all right, Logan. But I want good shots. With Professor Wendell in them.
Where is Wendell, you mug?
He ain't been hurt. He's down in the cellar.
Yeah. Sergeant, bring him up.
I'll get my camera set.
You can't take pictures of the professor for the newspapers.
Hey, not for decent newspapers.
Why not, you mugs?
Oh, on account of...
Because, the professor lost the belt that kept his pants up.
Yeah, and then suddenly he lost his pants.
We'll join the crowd at the Blue Note in just a moment. You know, tonight we're nearing the end of the holiday season, and to those of you who are exhausted, here's a suggestion. A good hot cup of coffee, which you can prepare in an instant, without fuss, without work, and without waiting even a minute. Now, I'm talking about soluble coffee, the amazing scientific discovery which makes really delicious coffee available at a moment's notice. Now, all you need is a cup, a spoon, and a glass jar, the sanitary, convenient anchor glass jar in which most of the better packers of soluble coffee bring you their products. The anchor glass jar opens quickly and simply. There's no trouble in measuring, no waste from spilling, and even more important, glass jars protect the flavor and freshness of soluble coffee against moisture long after they're open. You'll be delighted by the delicious soluble coffees now on the market, particularly those that come to you in convenient anchor glass containers sealed with anchor caps. Both products of Anchor Hocking. The most famous name in glass.
Them pictures you took of Professor Wendell after he was rescued was very different, Casey. The first time I ever saw pictures of a college professor wrapped in a blanket. He looked just like an Indian.
Professor Wendell didn't like to have him taken that way, Ethelbert, even though Casey was responsible for his rescue. He was kind of burned up.
Yeah, he wasn't as burned up as Jake Schultz and his hired firebugs are going to be.
No, they're facing murder and kidnapping charges. And with plenty of evidence to back them up.
Yeah, as the result of Casey busting some nice New Year's resolutions, Miss Williams.
Yeah. A safe and sane 1948.
You started swell. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Let's enlarge the idea. And no kidding.
You've got something there, Ethelbert. All right, all together.
Happy New Year to everyone.
Crime Photographer, starring Stotz Cotsworth as Casey, is brought to you each Thursday by the Anchor Hocking Glass Corporation, makers of Fire King Oven Glass, Anchor Glass Containers, Anchor Caps and Closures, all products of Anchor Hocking, the most famous name in glass.
Casey, crime photographer, hot New Year's party with Stotz Cotsworth and cast as originally broadcast, New Year's Day, January 1st, 1948.
Next we go to Fibber McGee and Molly. This is a later Fibber McGee and Molly program, and in this episode brought to you by Pet Milk, Fibber is not too happy. It's New Year's, and he's not too excited, and Molly wants him to go New Year's visiting, which makes him even more unhappy. We go back now to the Pet Milk program. Fibber McGee and Molly, January 1st, 1952.
Transcribed.
The Pet Milk Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. The first evaporated milk, Pet Milk, presents Fibber McGee and Molly, transcribed with Bill Thompson, Gail Gordon, Arthur Q. Bryan, Dick LeGrand, and me, Harlow Wilcox. The show is written by Phil Leslie and Keith Fowler and directed by Max Hutto, with music by the King's Men and Billy Mills Orchestra. Health, wealth, and happiness. That's our wish for you for 1952. And you can do a lot to make part of that wish come true. You can help keep your family well and happy by seeing that they get lots of good whole milk each day. And no milk you can buy is better than Pet evaporated milk. No milk makes it easier to give your family this needed protective food in such a variety of delicious ways. You see, just one pint of Pet milk supplies the same nourishing milk substances that you get in a quart of bottled milk. Because Pet milk is good, sweet country milk with more than half the water taken out by evaporation. So by using this concentrated milk, it's easy to put extra amounts of those protective substances into many favorite family dishes. Creamed meats and vegetables, gravies, custards, puddings, cream pies, to mention a few. And, of course, in place of cream for coffee. So start now to use Pet evaporated milk in the many ways it can be used to add extra nourishment to foods your family enjoys. Let Pet milk help to make 1952 a happy year for all of you. To Mrs. McGee of 79 Wistful Vista, today is the beginning of a bright new year, full of hopes, plans, and dreams. But to her husband, it's just another Tuesday. As we join Fibber McGee and Molly.
Oh, McGee, I wish you'd show a little more enthusiasm. This is the 1st of January, 1952. After all, this is a special day, you know.
What's so special about it? The sun came up this morning on schedule, and it'll go down this evening. Congress don't slap a luxury tax on it. Getting steamed up about New Year's Day, that's a lot of twaddle.
Well, now the rest of the world doesn't feel that way. Huh. Even the birds seem to be singing a little bit louder.
That's what I said. All this New Year's Day stuff is for the birds. Hand me one of them popcorn balls off the Christmas tree, will you?
Dear, all you've done all day is eat. There aren't many popcorn balls left either.
That's okay, I only want one. Watch it, though. I grabbed without looking a while ago and got what I thought was a popcorn ball and bit the rear end off a wax reindeer. Tasted horrible. Come on, give me one.
Well, hurry up and eat it, dearie. We should get started, you know. You promised.
Promised what? Oh, yeah. Going New Year's calling with you. Okay, I'll go, Tootsie. In fact, I'm looking forward to visiting our friends today.
Well, that's a little New Year's spirit, anyhow.
Sure. Anybody that you call at their house on New Year's Day ought to serve some kind of refreshments. Yeah, and I'm running kind of low on popcorn balls, too.
Look, sweetheart, you ought to make a New Year's resolution not to eat...
Resolutions. Pump. Not me, kiddo. Only reason people make resolutions anyhow is so they can break them the next day.
Oh, that isn't always true, McGee.
No, sometimes they break them the same day. Now, you take your Uncle Dennis when he was living with us. He comes up to me on New Year's Day and he says, McGee, he says, I made a resolution I ain't never going to take another drink. And I says, Uncle Dennis, that's a fine resolution. You betcha it is, says he, whipping out a bottle. Let's drink to it.
Well, anyhow, I'm making some resolutions for myself. I've just written out a list.
Yeah?
Yes. The first one is lose some weight.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. I'm afraid I'm going to have to start watching my figure.
Now, I've been watching. I've been watching your figure for years, baby, and you don't have to worry about it. Not a bit.
You don't think so?
No, sir. Your figure's fine. For your age. And wait.
Thank you, I think.
Oh, why worry about it? My gosh, when a girl's been married as long as you have, baby, people don't expect her to have the figure she had as a girl. Hey, what you doing? Scratching out that resolution?
No. I'm scratching out the second one.
What's that, the second one?
Only have kind thoughts about McGee.
Oh.
Go get your hat now.
Okay, I'm
wait,
coming.
Wait, wait. Oh. Come in. Oh, hello, Ollie.
Well, hello, Mrs. McGee. Are you stopping to say Happy New Year?
Well, the same to you, Ollie. We were just getting ready to go New Year's calling ourselves.
We were just talking about New Year's resolutions, Ollie. Did you make any?
Yes, Mrs. I resolved to took setting up exercises. I want to be like I was back in Sweden when I work out in the gymnasium.
Oh? Were you an athletic boy?
Oh, sure, me. I used to hang from trapeze all morning and swing from parallel bars all afternoon.
Well.
My arms get used like iron, but there was one trouble.
What was that, Ollie?
My legs get so puny, I have to walk on my hands. So, starting now, I'm going to took setting up exercises every night.
Yeah, at night?
Sure, that's when my daughter Christina's boyfriend comes over and he raids the icebox.
Oh?
Well, long as I'm setting up guarding the groceries, I might as well be took and setting up exercises.
Say, Ollie, is this Christina's steady boyfriend, the one with all the knuckles?
That's the one, Mrs., the football player.
Oh, yeah.
Yumbo Stone, his name is. He's a quarterback with a fullback appetite. You know, Christmas night, we have two turkeys in the icebox. Yumbo Stone comes over. Next morning, two carcasses.
Hmm. Young Stone polished off both birds, eh?
Yeah. And my missus says now she knows what the old saying means, kill two birds with one stone. Well, Happy New Year again, both you fellas.
Same to you, Ollie. Billy
Mills in the orchestra, and it's wonderful.
Mr. Wimple's house. Push the buzzer, dearie.
Okay.
Hello, Mr. Wimple.
Happy New Year, Wimp.
Hello, folks. My, what a nice surprise. Do come on in.
Thanks.
We decided to pay our friends a good old-fashioned New Year's call. Is Mrs. Wimple home?
No, Sweetie Face has gone to a meeting of her club.
Oh?
The Women's Institute to Civilize Husbands, known for short as the Witches.
Sounds like a worthwhile group.
Yes. They're holding an election today, and Sweetie Face expects to be made chief witch.
Oh?
I feel that she's the perfect choice. I gave her a lovely broom for Christmas.
Well, how sweet. Oh, I see you have some new things since we were here last, Mr. Wimple. That bookcase, for one.
Yes, that's new.
Beautiful.
Sweetie Face built it herself with her own big old hands.
My, that's remarkable.
She also built that coffee table.
Really? Well, it's lovely. And such a cute crocheted dolly on it.
Yes. I do nice work, too, don't I?
You run up that doily, Wimp?
Yes. Would you like to see some bath towels I crocheted, Mrs. McGee?
Oh.
One says hers on it, and the other says his by courtesy of her.
Some other day, Mr. Wimple, we have more calls to make.
Oh, you mustn't leave until I give you some refreshments. How about a slice of this fruitcake?
I'm afraid we haven't
time. Oh, sure, we got time. Pack off a hunk for me, Wimp.
All righty. I'd join you, but I made a New Year's resolution not to eat sweets or starches. Here's your cake.
A resolution? Boy, you don't catch me messing up my life. Hey, is that more food there on the table?
Yes. Just a little snack I fixed for Sweetie Face.
Looks good.
Would you care for some potato salad on another plate? Say when.
No fooling, Wimp. That resolution stuff is for the peasants, you know it? I ain't making any because a guy don't need them when he leads the good, normal, healthy, friendly, kindly, honest, sincere kind of life I lead. Boy, when?
Heavenly days. Honestly, McGee, I was ashamed of you. Did you have to make such a pig of yourself?
Where do you get that pig stuff? Did you ever see a pig eat potato salad and fruitcake?
Oh, you know what I mean. What about the ripe olives and the smoked oysters?
They weren't as good as that turkey sandwich, boy.
Oh, dear.
Hey, I hope Latrivius won't come to come here to his house.
Happy New Year, Mr. Mayor.
Hi. Well, it's the McGees. Come in, come in.
New Year's calling, Latriv. We're out seeing our friends, so we thought we might as well see you, too.
Well, this is a pleasant surprise. Another friend of yours is here, too.
Hello, Molly. Hi, pal. Happy New Year.
Well, Mr. Wilcox, the same to you.
Greetings, Junior.
Well, sit down, both of you.
Thanks.
Ah, it's great to relax with my friends a little. Spent most of the morning at the city council meeting where I delivered my annual New Year's address. I said, and I quote, "Members of our city council, as mayor of Wistful Vista, I feel that our fair city will make great strides during this year of 1949. In my opinion..."
Mr. Mayor, this is 1952.
Good heavens. I've delivered that same speech for 4 years and forgotten to change the day.
You should make a New Year's resolution to write a new one for next year, Mr. Mayor.
Don't you start with resolutions, Junior. None of that stuff for me. I say it's a lot of poppycock, and I'm one poppy that ain't going to go off half-cocked. Silly stuff.
Oh, now, wait a minute. There's nothing silly about it, pal. Everybody makes New Year's resolutions.
Why, certainly. I've resolved to give up cigars.
I've made a resolution myself.
As Julius Caesar said when the boys ganged up on him, "Et tu, Brutal?" Which means the party's getting rough.
Well, what did you resolve to do, Mr. Wilcox?
To take more walks and get more fresh air.
That's a fine idea, Harlow.
Yes, instead of walking to the market just once a day to buy a dozen cans of pet evaporated milk, I'll walk there 12 times a day and buy one can at a time.
You buy 12 cans of pet milk every day?
Well, of course. Doesn't everyone?
This may curdle your whole outlook on life. No, they doesn't.
Mr. Wilcox, what do you do with all those cans?
Well, I carry them around with me, Molly. Huh? When I eat in a restaurant, for instance, I always leave the waiter a can of pet milk for a tip, instead of just money.
The next time you go back, they can't find a table for you.
No, on the contrary, pal, they're eager to serve me.
Is that so?
Yes, you see, waiters are experts on food, and they know that pet milk is the secret of so many rich, nourishing, delicious-tasting dishes.
Mm.
They know that food cooked with pet evaporated milk is extra good, and extra good for you.
Good for you, Mr. Wilcox.
And then there are the little children.
Oh. Oh, yes, the little children.
I often see them outside a candy shop. Their little noses pressed against the glass, yearning for the goodies they cannot buy.
Oh, yes.
I beckon them to me, and in each tiny hand I place a can of pet milk.
But you never buy them any candy.
Oh, no, no. Certainly not. I'm sure they'd rather have pet because they've heard their mothers say how pet milk helps them to grow strong and tall, how it builds their little bodies into sturdy young manhood.
The girls, too?
And young womanhood. How it helps them build straight bones and good sound teeth.
Someday, Junior, as you walk towards them little kiddies outside the candy store with the cans of pet milk rattling around in your pockets, them little kiddies are going to look at you and say, Mr. Wilcox, you clink.
If I may interrupt this discussion a minute.
Oh, yes.
How about some refreshments, Molly? Some cake? Some ice cream?
No, thanks, Mr. Mayor. We've been eating all day. One of us has.
I'll have a little, Homer.
Well, hold the dish, McGee. There's plenty of ice cream. Just say when.
Okay, boy, dish it up. Reason I get such a bang out of these resolutions you guys make, Latrivia, is on account of because I made a stack of them. Oh, I made them last year at 8 o'clock in the morning. And what time do you think I busted them? 10. I didn't say when, I said 10.
Oh, pardon me.
That stuff is okay for you guys that need to improve yourselves, but a guy that leads the kind of a good, normal, healthy, friendly, kindly, honest, sincere kind of life I lead don't need them. When?
Sweet Genevieve.
See, now, the old-timer lives along here somewhere, doesn't he, dearie?
Next house, kiddo. Hey, you know, Molly, this New Year's calling is kind of fun.
Why, sure it is. Although you must have added 20 pounds since we left home.
Well, hello there, kids. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too, Mr. Old-timer.
Yeah, we're just out New Year's calling, old-timer.
Come on in, kids. Come in.
Thanks.
I'll have to excuse the looks of my room, daughter. Kind of mussed up.
Cozy little joint you got here, old-timer, if you can stand it.
May not be a castle, kids. Maybe the decor ain't exactly modern, but to me, it's a goat's nest.
Well, we can't stay but a minute. We just thought...
Hey, let me get you kids some refreshments. It ain't every day you come New Year's calling. How about a piece of cake?
No, thanks.
Now you're talking, boy. I'm starving.
Oh, this is wonderful cake, kids.
Good.
Bessie made it for me with her own two little heads, or hands. Hand me that hammer and chisel, son.
Chisel? What kind of cake is it?
Pound cake, daughter. I'll pound you out a piece of it. When I sit down today to write out my New Year's resolution, I said...
Resolution? My gosh, you go for that bunk, too.
Always been a great hand for New Year's resolutions, kids. Made my first one when I was just a child of 21.
21.
I said, and I quote, I hereby resolve to stop chasing after girls.
Chasing girls? Did you stick to it?
No, I sure did, Johnny. From that day on, I never chased another girl. Just women. Have some more pound cake, kids. This okay, calls for a celebration. Yeah. Happy New Year!
Happy New Year, kids!
The King's Men and Swinging Down the Lane.
Sleigh bells ringing, voices singing, and all the world's aglow. Come on along and go. Put on your earmuffs, your mittens, and galoshes. Let's go sloshing in the snow. Everybody hand in hand, swinging down the lane. Everybody feeling grand, swinging down the lane. Then that's a time I miss the bliss that we might have known. On a night like this,
when I'm all alone,
when the moon is on the rise, honey, I'm blue. Watching lovers making eyes like we used to do. When the moon is on the wane, still I'm waiting all in vain. Should be swinging down the lane with you. Watching lovers making eyes like we used to do. When the moon is on the wane, I wait in vain. Should be swinging down the lane with you.
You know, I find this whole thing very amusing, Molly, this New Year resolution routine. Even the old-timer goes for that stuff.
I think you'll find it's a pretty popular custom, though, dearie.
Not with me, it ain't, Tootsie. Just think for a minute how those guys have took all the fun out of life for themselves,
well,
Molly.
Well, now the...
Ole, taking setting up exercises.
He's ambitious.
Latrivia's giving up cigars.
He was smoking too much.
Wally Wimple gonna cut out sweets.
He gained a pound last year.
Wilcox is gonna take a long walk in the fresh air every day.
It'll keep him healthy.
And even the old-timer going to bed early. Ha! Give me a slice of that fruitcake, will you?
Fruitcake?
Yeah.
Look, we're walking along Oak Street, dearie. I don't have any fruitcake.
In your purse.
In my purse?
Yeah. I put a few slices of fruitcake in your purse at Latrivia's house.
Oh, no.
Sure. Oh, I wrapped it up good and nice in a napkin.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
There.
No wonder this bag felt so heavy. Here, take it all out of here.
No, 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 thanks. One piece is enough for now, Tootsie. I'll ask you when I want another one. Oh, hey. By a strange coincidence, Doc Gamble's office is right here, Molly. Let's look in on the old boy.
Oh, this is a holiday, dearie. He won't be in his office today.
Don't you worry. He'll be in. Well, look who's here. Happy New Year, Molly.
The same to you, Doctor.
And a jolly greeting to you even, my boy. Happy 52, Fatso. What did I tell you, Molly? While normal people are home resting up like they're supposed to, old Money Hungry here keeps his office open so he can get rich off of the sick and the wounded.
Now, McGee, that's a terrible thing to say.
I'm just kidding, Doc. Personally, I regard you not only as a friend, but as a guy that he's the most prominent doctor in Wistful Vista.
Well, thank you, but I'm not really very prominent, I'm afraid.
Oh, sure you are, Doc. Why, my gosh, your stomach alone is as prominent as any other complete doctor.
Ah, McGee, you'd better move out of that glass house before you start throwing any rocks.
Oh, he doesn't bother me, Molly. I'm used to him. What did he do? Make a New Year's resolution to be more impossible than ever this year?
Ah, resolutions. Pah!
He didn't make any this year, Doctor.
No.
It is his contention that one needs no resolutions when one lives a good, normal, healthy, friendly, kindly, honest, sincere kind of life, Doctor.
Who? Me!
I didn't recognize the description, Chiselhead.
Well, I've had a lot of laughs out of all the silly resolutions I've listened to so far, Fatso. I will say, however, that all the hosts that we've been guests of up to now have all had the courtesy to offer us some kind of refreshments.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Pig Nose. It was thoughtless of me. I have something here that a patient of mine brought me. A beautiful fruitcake.
Fruitcake. Oh.
What's the matter? Something wrong, dearie?
Well, look at his face.
Ugh.
That's as pretty a two-tone green as I've ever seen. What's the matter, my boy?
No, I don't know, Doc. I just looked at that fruitcake and all... Oh, my stomach.
Oh, dear.
Huh? What's he been eating today, Molly? Besides fruitcake, cookies, candy, potato salad, smoked oysters, oh, turkey, salted nuts, and 8 or 10 cigars.
Popcorn balls, Doctor.
Oh, that's just great. Take off your shirt, McGee.
Okay, Doc. Oh.
Hmm. Is he wearing a life preserver under his undershirt, Molly? Oh, that's McGee.
Doctor, that is Christmas living.
Has he been getting any exercise?
Well, he's been striking a lot of matches. He lights his own cigars, you know.
You do any walking?
3 times a day, Doctor. The Davenport to the table and back to the Davenport.
Oh, yeah. What is it, Doc? Is it serious? Can you? You can tell me. I'll be brave. Hold my hand, Molly.
All right.
Oh. It's the life you've been living, my boy. Oh. Nothing drastic, but you'll have to mend your ways a little.
Anything, Doc, anything. Oh, what do I have to do?
5 simple things. Yeah. Simple. Molly, you see that he does them.
Right, Doctor.
No cigars. No sweets. Regular exercise. Get to bed early.
Oh.
And take a long walk every morning.
Oh.
Happy New Year resolutions, dearie.
Oh, this is ridiculous.
Fibber and Molly return in a moment. Since this is the day for resolutions, suppose you resolve in 1952 to have more delicious meals at lower cost. Not possible? Oh, yes, it is. When you use pet evaporated milk. There are so many ways you can use pet milk in place of foods that cost more. For breading chops and cutlets, for example, use pet milk in place of eggs. In mashed potatoes, use pet milk in place of butter. In your coffee, use pet milk in place of cream. And in special whipped cream desserts, use low-cost pet milk in place of expensive whipping cream. You can use pet milk these many ways because it's a concentrated milk, concentrated to double richness by evaporation. And in every case, the foods you fix with pet milk will taste extra good and cost less. That's right, for pet milk costs less generally than bottled milk or any other form of milk, and much, much less than cream. So in 1952, do as other good cooks do. Use pet evaporated milk and enjoy better food at lower cost.
Are you comfortable there on the Davenport, dearie?
Yeah, I feel okay, I guess. Gee, I'm sure glad I got a chance to visit all our little friends before I got took sick.
Well, that's a very nice thought, dearie.
Yeah, it would have been awful if I'd have got took sick before I got a chance to eat all that swell turkey and potato salad and smoked oysters and fruitcake and popcorn balls and all the
rest, dearie. Hmm? You need rest.
Hmm.
Especially your mouth.
Okay. Good night.
Good night and Happy New Year, everyone.
The first evaporated milk, pet milk, brings you Fibber, McGee, and Molly each week at this time. Be with us again next Tuesday night, won't you? Have you ever tried to change your whole life just by changing your looks? Well, that's what a young friend of Sally Carter's does with surprising results. In the story of the week on Pet Milk's Mary Lee Taylor program next Saturday morning. And immediately following the story of the week, Mary Lee Taylor gives you the special husband-tested recipe of the week for a main dish that's a big hit with men, barbecued corn and meatballs. Be sure to enjoy Pet Milk's big double feature Mary Lee Taylor program next Saturday morning over this same NBC station.
This program was transcribed. Next, it's Playhouse on Broadway on NBC.
Doesn't matter when the Fibber, McGee, and Molly programs were written, they were all terrific. I don't know that there were too many bad Fibber, McGee, and Molly programs. January 1st, 1952, here on Same Time, Same Station, where you can request shows. Next week, we'll hear a salute to Rose Marie, who passed away last Thursday, unfortunately.
December 28th.
December 28th, yeah. So we'll be playing some shows that she was a part of. And we'll be doing a lot of things throughout the year, more Ben Wright and other shows as well. If you'd like to request shows, Larry Gassman or John Gassman, G-A-S-S-M-A-N, or